All right. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Beautiful Struggle podcast episode 8. I'm your host, Octavius A. Newman. I'm here with Dre Murray.
Yeah.
Dre Murray is recording artist. I just found out he dunks on cats who run their mouth.
Occasionally.
Every now and then. Yeah, every now you know, and then. They might get yammed on.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
And if you're new to the podcast, the whole purpose of this is me having people come on to tell their origin story. Because I believe that if you highlight the beauty and the struggle of the creative process, you can inspire other people to participate. And that's one of the big things about Bear Fruit. Believe, create, inspire. We want you to take what you believe, create something, inspire your circle of influence. We want you to actually get involved and make things and do things. And there can be struggles and difficulties sometimes, but I wanted to use the opportunity that I have with some of the people that I know and that I meet to have them tell their origin story, tell where they came from, so that you can be inspired, you can find out about people you don't know, and you can hear stories that I've had a chance to hear behind closed doors, but hear them in public. So hopefully, you know, they can encourage you, they can challenge you, they can convict you, you know, and at the end of the day, you can walk away a little more knowledgeable than you were before we started.
Yeah.
So
that's dope.
How you doing?
I'm good, man. I'm trying to finish this project before I leave. Mm-hmm. But I'm good. I'm a little stressed. But other than that.
Stressed out because of the project?
Yeah, just the time constraint. Trying to fit everything in and then trying to duplicate what we did. The last time I was down there for my album, we only had like 4 days to do it. And we did it.
You did and your whole album in 4 days?
I had some of it like written and recorded, but yeah, we did. We tracked the vocals in 4 days, and then and then Whit lost the entire album. His computer, like,
beautiful struggle crashed. Right there. We started already. That sounds terrible.
Yeah,
his you recorded crashed. Your whole album and you lost the whole album.
Yeah, I had probably like a couple of like I think Swoop had to send in his verse for something, and there was like another hook or something that needed to be done.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't have one of the songs that we actually added during the time where I had to re-record. It wasn't in that batch of songs. But yeah, it was done. Like, I remember going to the airport, and this cat, I flew into Chicago, and this cat that had a radio show that was a fan or whatever was like, "Man, look, Dre Murray, you working on the album?" I was like, "Man, I just got it done, brother. I'm, like, excited."
Yeah.
And I get home, and the next day, Whit was like, "I'm about to have a heart attack, man." It's like, "Dawg, what's going on? The folder is gone." He was like, "Kelly almost had to take me to the emergency room."
Did you take, he almost fainted in here?
Yeah, because he was like, he made a gold, because the name of the album was Gold Rush, but he made a gold folder on a desktop. He goes upstairs. He said Slev came back downstairs and the folder was like gone. So it's like, you know.
Sock monster, we got album monster.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying?
Just so, coming through.
Yeah, so I had to track everything again when I got home.
Mm.
And then we got to add another song to the project, which made it better. Then we also added some extra instruments and stuff. So it worked out, man. It came out completely different and better, in my opinion. So I'm not tripping, but that was a struggle. So now, again, we're trying to duplicate what we did back then again in a short amount of time, and it's just working against that, and then also working against that album, the pressure to try to do that again. So
Now, for folks who don't know you, don't know your stuff, don't know what you do, kind of tell them a little bit, like, from if you had to introduce yourself to a bunch of people who never met you before.
So I'm from Houston originally, Houston, Texas originally. I sound like, I guess a lot of people said I sound like an East Coast artist at times. So I love, like, storytelling, and, you know, that's how I hooked up with his production. Allows me to freely tell stories and communicate and people to hear me. So I started off in 2003 doing Christian hip hop. And then in 08, I released a project before I, like, started working with Whit called Manumit. But then in 09, me and Whit started releasing, we hooked up and started releasing a series called Hell's Paradise. And released part one and part two of that, which led to kind of our situation with Collision Records. And then we worked on my album Gold Rush, another project we just dropped called Southern Lights, and now we're here working on my next solo project. So
yeah, Hell's Paradise is where I first engaged with your stuff.
Oh, where?
That's the first place I heard of it before.
Dope.
Yeah, because I didn't, honestly, when I first heard you, I was like, oh, this guy, you know, and saying it in a weird way, oh, this guy's a Christian rapper, so to speak, because it didn't sound to me like what is stereotypical.
Yeah.
At that time,
my experience. Was it Hell's Paradise 1?
I gotta be honest, I'm not sure which one.
What year was it? You remember?
Man, this was some years ago.
Okay, so that's probably part one, because part two dropped in 2012, so
yeah,
it probably was part one.
Yeah, the first time I was like, oh, okay, you know, it didn't hit me right away, like, the gospel is, Jesus is, this is, that is, you know what I mean? It was like, oh, okay, I'm just listening to what this is. A lot of it, I was kind of like, what is he talking about?
Yeah.
Like, what is he saying? Like, wait, at the end, it's like, okay, huh?
Yeah. You know? Wiz brother said that yesterday. He was like, the outro, he was like, after he heard the outro, he was like, what is life? Like, what's going on here? But, like, that whole project was birthed out of the manumit, what I just referenced, the project before that.
Mm-hmm.
I started following a formula, I felt like, for Christian hip-hop. Because, like I said, I started in 03 and getting into this world of Christian hip-hop and this subculture, and I started kind of following a format, and I was growing, and so I was growing out of that format, but I was still trying to use that format because it was working. You know what I mean?
Working.
Like, it was working because you know, people don't, I mean, we don't like to talk about this as artists, but, I mean, if we're going to get shows, people want to hear a certain style of music,
right?
And the style of music that I was doing at the time, even though I knew I wanted to grow beyond that, the people that I had previously been, you know, getting booked for, were calling me back, you know what I'm saying? And I don't think it was like a conscious thing where I'm like, I'm gonna make this type of song, but it was just, you're just following a formula. And then, you know, one day I was like, man, I want to do something completely different. And I had this idea for like a couple years that was just burning on the inside of me. And I met Wit, and I like wrote this long email to him about the what Hell's Paradise meant, what I wanted to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
And from there, we just, you know, we started rolling. And, you know, some of it might not make sense to a lot of people, but to me, it was just me kind of freely being able to express myself and grow. I had, me and Wit, we argued on a couple joints because I wanted to bring like some sort of resolution at the end,
because
there'll be two verses where it's just like me telling the story, and I'm like, man, I want to go back to that old formula, like, where it was like,
right,
we gotta bring this home. And he's like, man, just tell the story, dude. Like, just that can impact somebody the same way that you know, bring it home, or it could impact somebody, and then, you know, you trying to bring it home might not impact anybody because it feels calculated, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, a lot of people was blessed by it. A lot of people told me that they, you know, it resonated with them and their struggles. So, you know, from there, I just, part two was still kind of a struggle, but after part two with my album, I kind of got comfortable in my own skin. So,
yeah, that's funny that you say comfortable in your own skin, because I think, I know for me, I am still struggling with being comfortable in my own skin. I talk to my wife about it all the time, about how it's like, am I crazy?
Mm-hmm.
You know? And she's like, you're weird, but you're not crazy.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You're different. You're strange. You're odd.
Yeah.
You know? But you're not crazy. Because it's you want to be liked.
Mm-hmm.
You want to be understood. You want people to agree, absolutely. And when people go, they twist their face up at you, it there's a lot of, like, you can feel a lot of pressure to go, oh, how can I turn that frown into a smile?
Exactly.
How can I make you guys, you know, like this? But I think, for me, it does kind of go back to when I was younger, where I was really encouraged to think, you know, to process, to chew on stuff, to figure stuff out on my own. And I always like to ask artists and creative people to kind of take me back to the beginning, because a lot of stuff that we can look at right now, we can even talk about right now, okay, right now I'm here and so, but like a superhero, if you see Peter Parker, if you don't know who Peter Parker is, I don't even know what to tell you, people on the internet to listen to this, but you know, you go back to Peter Parker, who's Spider-Man, spoilers, sorry, And you see him as a nerd. You see him, his relationship with Uncle Ben and Aunt May. And you see him get bit by the spider. You see all this stuff happen. So now when he's Spider-Man and you see the decisions he makes,
yeah,
it's kind of like, oh, I get it. I can see the growth. I can see how this kid, Peter, this grown adult Peter, you know what I mean?
That's
so
good, man. Yeah.
I like to take me back to, like, the beginning. Like,
yeah.
You know what I mean?
I'm the youngest of, like, three boys.
Mm-hmm.
So I was able to just
all
start
dudes.
There. Yeah, and I was able to, my dad wasn't there.
Mm-hmm.
Just my mom, my grandmother, two of my uncles, one of my cousins at times, and my two brothers
in
the same house.
That's a lot of people.
Yeah, so you know, we were renting a house. We had just moved from these apartments. It was kind of like a project almost, and then we moved to this house we were renting. But being the youngest in that environment,
mm-hmm.
like I was able to see so much. But then again, like from my middle brother, it's 11 year difference. So
from you, the youngest,
from me to the youngest to the middle brother is 11 years, and there's another 2 years after that with my oldest brother. So conversation, like we ain't on the same level.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So as a youngster, who do you talk to?
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? Like you don't really have, and then my close cousins live miles away on the east side. I grew up on the south side of Houston, so I would talk to myself. I would create imaginary. That's how my imagination started to run.
Yeah.
And you know, my grandmother, who was like my second mom, like she noticed that, and she would encourage it. She wouldn't, you know, stop doing that, boy. She would like tell mm-hmm. people, you know, Andre is so smart and he can, you know, imagine this, imagine that. So
yeah.
I saw that as something like, oh, this is cool. So this is like a good thing.
Yeah.
You know, so I started creating from that. But still, I didn't have the confidence to communicate that to people because I didn't have anybody, you know, I didn't have peers to really talk to.
So you're doing this in your head.
Yeah, I'm doing all this in my head. Like, I'm, you know,
there's even no outlet at this point.
There's really no outlet. But then my oldest brother wanted to be a DJ.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, there was all kind of records and there was a lot of music going on and people dubbing tapes and trying to pick up a microphone and do stuff.
Hey,
so.
Dubbing tapes. First of all,
oh,
you just lost a lot
it.
Of people. You just lost it. What is a tape?
Yeah, so a cassette tape before CDs, after 8-track,
mm-hmm.
there was a cassette tape, and basically we used to take an instrumental tape, like one in particular that I used to use growing up was DJ Quick, who's a producer. He used to always put a Quick's groove or instrumental in his tape. So you take that instrumental, you basically send that instrumental to another tape, you hook in a microphone, and then you record over that as well and record the vocals. It comes out really, really airy.
Yeah.
After you dub it a bunch of times, but I saw my brothers doing that growing up, and so I still didn't, they wouldn't let me. I'm the youngest, like, you know, I would have to do it by myself and on my own, and then go when I go to my cousin's house. But so anyway, there was no creative outlet at the time. So I would write. I started writing. You know, not getting in and rapping over music. I would just start writing. So it was all internalized and I would put it on the paper. And then I met my cousin. He had some equipment. He lived on the east side. We would start actually recording stuff. So I was able to get stuff out. But still, I didn't know how to communicate one-on-one to people or in a crowd.
Really?
No. Like,
so you struggle with just regular social.
Yes, like people would ask me.
Stuff.
I was like, from a young age, like probably 8 years old, we were recording stuff, but I would never want people to know that I was recording stuff. I would never want to share anything with people. Like, dudes would be freestyling in middle school. I can remember us freestyling on the bus, and everybody else is freestyling. I'm the one that's like really recording stuff, but I'm not saying anything.
Right.
And so that stayed with me for a long time, like as far as just my lack of confidence in communicating with people and sharing my art or whatever.
Why do you think that was?
I think it came from the fact that, like, while having an imagination and creating, you know, people in your head and talk and internalizing stuff, while it's good for a kid, you gotta have a place to let that out. And that's one of the things, I didn't have the place to let that out. While my grandmother, like, encouraged that stuff, mm-hmm. I can remember a lot of times, like, I was the hyper kid. Mm-hmm. So I would do certain things that I thought was funny.
Right.
But everybody else is like, man, stop cutting. You know, my two older brothers, I just got on their nerves. So it's like, you know, who do you communicate that to? So, and I was just really, really shy. Like, you know what I'm saying? Unless mm-hmm. I was acting out. I was really, really shy. So I had a lot of insecurities about sharing.
Unless you were acting out.
Yeah, like, unless I was getting a laugh.
Oh, okay.
You know what I'm saying? Like, if I got a laugh, then I was like, okay, I'm funny. Like, right. I'm going to continue to do this. But I would never... It would always be on accident.
Mm.
If I tried to make you laugh,
right.
You know, it wouldn't be funny.
Right.
But, like, I can remember one time specifically, dog, like, I was in fourth grade, and this cat, he was the class clown, and he would just crack jokes on everybody. And he cracked a joke on me one time, and I don't know why, but there was this song about, like, your dad being a crackhead or something uh-huh. that was like a local hit.
Right.
And some kind of way I just put that together like real quick and mm-hmm. just spit it out real quick and everybody laughed, right? And from then on, I was like, I can do this. You know what I'm saying? But it was an accident. It wasn't like a intentional thing. So,
mm-hmm.
But yeah, so I struggled my whole life. Even now, man, like, communicating, I think the booth or just being in a, like me and Whit being here and just recording is my safe haven.
Hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Like getting out and actually sharing with people has been a struggle. I'm better at it now because I've done it over and over, but I would much rather like be here just creating.
Hmm.
And you know, if people hear it, then fine. But a lot of times it's just me just creating just to get stuff out, you know what I'm saying?
That's really crazy because if you listen to your music, there is a very confident person that I hear.
Yeah.
You know? Like, and it's not even kind of like, oh, you know, I'm just saying this stuff with a bunch of swagger confidence. Yeah. It's not like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no,
like a lot of rap music right now is very melodic and sing-songy and da 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 da. It's like, listen, this is what I have to say,
yeah.
and I'm saying it.
Yeah.
You know, so it's interesting for me to sit here and go, really?
Yeah.
Like this is.
But I think that's part of the. When I started writing, it was very story. It was always story based.
Mm-hmm.
And as I got older, I did start showing my brother, my middle brother, stuff, and he encouraged me to keep doing it. Mm-hmm. But I was never thinking about writing to a group of people. Mm-hmm. Like even though I saw people on stage and they were, you know, I was always writing to my notebook. Like I was just writing, creating stories, or I was writing to one person, my brother, if he liked it. And I think it goes back to what I said about, you know, doing something on accident, getting a laugh on accident.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as I've continued to do it, and you hear people give you positive feedback, yeah, okay, it gives me the confidence to do it.
Right.
But let somebody say something negative about it, it's maximized because I don't know how to handle that.
Mm.
I've always just reacted off of the laugh or the positive. Does that make sense?
It's like, it makes a lot of sense.
So that's the, you know, and that's what the struggle is for me on stage is, like, if, you know, people don't, not that they don't know how to act during a concert, they just might, you know, want to listen and not move.
Mm.
So if they're just staring at you while you're doing your thing, in with my personality and my experience, that means that I'm bombing up here because you're not moving.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And after the show, they're the main ones that are like, man, when you said such and such and such and such.
Right.
But so that always, like, rejuvenates me and gives me confidence to keep going. But there's been times when you don't talk to that person, and I'll think about that the whole night.
You got this one person's face in your mind.
Yeah, I'm like this man, cat. Dang, dog, were they? Oh, dang, man. So, but that just comes from, again, just that lack of confidence that I had growing up. And the imagination thing was good, but it was also like a crutch, like that I ran to.
Tell me more about the crutch.
It was just a way to, I do it now. Like I somebody will say something to me, a day later, I'll think of a comeback.
Right.
Does that make sense? Like, it's like a day later.
Yeah.
I have nothing to say in the moment. Mm. Like, I don't, the reaction is not there. I'm just stuck. I'm froze because I don't know how to do that. Or I struggle with doing that. But days later, I'll run to my, it's not a notebook anymore. It's just me thinking of stuff in my head. And I'll go over the conversation and what I should have said over and over in my head because I'm just trained to, like, think about it later or go to my notebook and write stuff down. So for me, it's been a crutch because when I do that, and to me, it's like, oh, you resolved it.
Yeah.
You told them.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Head, like in my head, like you got your point across, but really I didn't. You know what I mean? So so that's what the crutch. I hate confrontation. So the imagination thing, I could always, I had, like, you know, kids have imaginary friends when they're little, but I was always able to speak to that person or speak to my notebook about the problem and never the person. You know what I mean? So that's the crutch. It's like I can always run back to that, or I can put it in a rhyme.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? And be in subliminally talk about it and code it. And
right.
That's why a lot of the stuff you like, man, you know, I might not understand it because it might be something that I know that you don't know. Because again, if you don't get it, okay, oh well, I'm getting it out of my system and I understand what I'm talking about.
Do you feel a responsibility in a sense to, because I mean, the stuff that you're, well, first of all, let me back up. I want to thank you for being transparent because that's very honest stuff that you're saying.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like to say your notebook and the struggles, and I think this is stuff that people who are listening and even me can relate to.
Yeah.
You know, someone says something to you and in the moment you don't say something. Or for me, a lot of times I say too much.
Yeah.
Because when I'm hurt or when I'm scared, I tend to go forward.
Yeah.
Not backwards.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I do a lot of like, oh, I really shouldn't have said that.
Yeah.
You know, like, and it's taken a long time for me to actually start getting honest with myself and going, you know, that really hurts your feelings, Octavius.
Yeah.
You're sad. You're scared of that person.
Right.
That person scares you. You feel like he's smarter than you. Mm. You know what I mean? Like, all of this, like, real honest stuff.
Yeah.
It's hard because I didn't grow up with a father either. So there's a lot of figuring out what manhood is.
Exactly.
And what, how are you supposed to respond? And you know, you have movies, TV shows, media, music telling you what you're supposed to be.
Exactly.
And
that's good.
You kind of just have this mutation that arrives of what real life is. And I think part of my mutation is I go forward.
Yeah.
You know, I go aggressive. I raise my voice. I, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I call myself being honest. I'm being real. Like what?
Right.
And now
keeping,
I'm starting.
It 100.
Yeah. I'm finding out, yo, that person, they really, really hurt you.
Yeah.
And when you get hurt, this is what you do.
Yeah.
And I appreciate people who are able to kind of, like, you know, know themselves and get a chance to kind of dig in and go, this is what I'm doing.
Yeah.
This is what I'm doing. So I appreciate you doing that.
Yeah, no doubt.
You know
man.
What I mean? And I'm sure people listening will appreciate that.
Yeah. I think, like, knowing yourself, like, that's something that, like, I'm very, like, over aware of myself.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another thing. Like, when people tell me about a flaw, I probably already know about it.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, for them to tell me about it, just, I'm sensitive to that, so it makes it even worse. You know what I mean? So it's kind of like they might not have even meant it in a, like, a malicious way or to hurt me, or they might not even say anything about the flaw, but I just think that they're thinking about the flaw.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Because I'm constantly thinking about it. So you know, you go to back to the notebook, or I play that out in my head all the time. So that just goes into my writing, man. Like, you know, sometimes when I can't, when I get writer's block or whatever, it's because I don't have any of those experiences.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
So it's out of difficulty that a lot of your
absolutely
creativity comes from.
Absolutely. Like, my best work with the Hell's Paradise stuff, like, 90% of that was not, like, made, those aren't, like, made up. You know what I mean? Like, those are from, there's a joint called Spaz Out and Spazzing Out, where it's about, you know, divorce and just a dude that's like, you know, one of my, or my best friend, not one of my best, like my best friend, like his whole story. So it's not just me. If I see somebody else's struggle,
yeah,
I'm able to communicate that, you know what I'm saying? And it was, again, that's going back to me having two older brothers and seeing their mishaps and their mistakes. Mm. And kind of being the scribe or being the person along for the ride, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. To see them to get in trouble and pull back and like, oh, I probably shouldn't do that, but I'll write about it, you know what I'm saying? Or yeah. I'll tuck that one away for later to try to, I don't even know if it's to really teach a lesson, but it's just to hope, in hopes that it'll resonate with somebody to start a conversation. Mm-hmm. Like, I always want to start a conversation about something.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Do you feel a responsibility to... Because when you talk about starting a conversation, I get that.
Yeah.
Like, I like to start conversations. And if I'm honest, I like to do things that are a bit controversial sometimes, mm-hmm. or talk about controversial topics.
Mm-hmm.
In doing that, do you feel a responsibility to come with a conclusion or a solution in starting the conversation? Because I know a lot of, I mean, honestly, I know a lot of people feel that responsibility, especially mm-hmm. coming from, you know, different worldviews and backgrounds.
Right.
It's like, well, I can't just bring up a topic and kind of set it on the table. I got to have this solution.
Yeah.
You know?
And that was part of my, when I said the formula that I was in, there was always, I have the solution.
Right.
I have the answer. You know what I'm saying? When a lot of times I was struggling and I had doubts about what I thought was the answer.
Mm.
But I couldn't communicate that. But if I would have communicated that, that probably would have helped somebody more than me saying I have the answer. You feel what I'm saying? So now I think it's a struggle. It's not a struggle, but I'm finding a balance between the two to say that, you know, I have the answer, but also I go through these struggles, you know what I'm saying? And sometimes I don't have it, or I don't think I have the answer, or I doubt, or I go through this.
Yeah.
And so I think in doing that, that teaches people and also brings them to the solution in a way, because it's one thing that really helped me was I worked with a church in Tulsa. Huge church, and they do a lot of live performances and like performance art and stuff during their services. And it was this one deal where they had me like dress up in a tuxedo. I went and bought some Jordan 9s. Like, they pay for all this stuff. They wanted it to look right. They had a picture in their mind of what they wanted to see.
Mm-hmm.
I had this guy that was like a butler. He came out with the mic on a platter, and it was just this whole performance piece. And I was like, man, like, at first I was like, oh, this is dope. But then I started thinking, I'm like, man, how is this, like, gonna minister to somebody? And, you know, it's all about this art and this and that. And then the next day, after I did my joint, like, the next day, dude was like, hey, yo, man, appreciate you, man. Like, 70 kids got saved tonight, man. Or last night, you know, they really, ministering to them and, you know, they want to come back to the church and this and that. And I got smacked, like, right then and there, because, like, the whole time I was focused on, you know, I was making it about me. Like, I have the solution, and they're not going to get closer to God unless I verbally say this exact thing.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But God was saying, I can use anything I want to.
Mm-hmm.
And I gave you this opportunity. You just follow. You're in a play. You play your part, and I'll do the rest. You know what I'm saying? And that's not to say that sometimes I don't feel that he wants me to communicate the solution flat out.
Mm-hmm.
But for me and my gift, like, I feel, like I said, I'm comfortable in my own skin right now. I feel like my place in this whole thing is to start the conversation.
That's good.
You know what I'm saying?
That's freeing me up.
Yeah.
What you're saying right now is actually freeing me up in some ways.
That's dope. Because I don't... Know? Sometimes we don't have the answer, dude. I mean, we know that, like, the answer is... We know the gospel, and the answer is to, you know, Jesus. I don't want to be cliche. People always say, just say Jesus or whatever. But it really is Jesus that's the answer. But sometimes you have to let people come to that conclusion on their own. Like, the way that I came to it wasn't because somebody just grabbed my hand and dragged me to the cross.
Mm-hmm. Or they pulled their phone out, went to notes, and said, and just started reading
this particular thing. They told me about their experience, what happened to them, and I'm going through this with my oldest daughter right now, too. Like, they told me about their experience. They told me what happened to them, their experience with God and their old life and their life now. And to me, I didn't just hear them say that. I saw them actually living that. So that led me to make a decision for myself. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I try to do in my music, is just give people, paint a picture to where people can make that decision on their own. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I felt like I was saying, that frees me up in some ways, because that's something I've been wrestling with feeling like, oh, here's the formula, and you must comply.
Right.
And it's culture. Like, there's this culture, and here's how we do it.
Yeah.
And if you are here, or, you know, you're a part of this, then you have to kind of comply.
Right.
Or else there's some sort of, like, repercussion.
There's something wrong. Yeah,
you know, there's something wrong with you.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's like, I always want to shake that off.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, I think there's value in how you do it and these methods, but this method is not law. This method is preference.
Right, exactly.
You know, like, the solution may be the same. The solution may be two, but I don't necessarily have to get there the same way you got there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And like, even you say the answer is Jesus, a lot of times while that may be the answer, that blossoms differently in people.
Exactly.
You know? So you can't just kind of like lather the same kind of mechanical thing on each person and expect it to be the same. And I like the fact that You've gone, man, I'm good at starting conversations.
Yeah.
I'm good at this particular thing, and I feel like that's my role.
And that's what it is. It's not it's not really even like a preference, because to me, in my mind, when you think about it logically, it's like I would do the other. You know what I'm saying? Like, I would say, okay, this is Christian hip hop, or just speaking to somebody in general, like, this is how I probably should lay it out, because they'll get this better than me doing it another way. Mm. But I don't fit in that role.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And it wasn't until like you just wake up and you have this just awakening that, man, like, it's not that that's not working.
Or that's wrong,
but you just don't feel like you fit in that. And I didn't feel like I fit in that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I still was struggling with it. Do Hell's Paradise 1, Hell's Paradise 2. When I did my album, I had a church even. I was supposed to do a show there. And a bunch of parents made a big deal about me performing there. And, you know, told the pastor apologized. We got on the phone. He was talking about he might even, you know, he got to pray about with his wife, should they be there, because they didn't want me to come to the show, and they just dropped the show because they said my project didn't have the gospel in it. I'm, you know, basically just, you know, what is this video? And they had all these questions. And so I quickly, at first I was sad. I was hurt. Like, I wanted to cry.
Yeah.
But then, like, God reassured me, like, man, like, you fit over here.
Hmm.
Because a week before that, and I told the pastor this, somebody hit me on Twitter, and they're like, man, your song on your album, Letter in a Bottle, my friend, dude, he's alcoholic. He's been listening to that song all week, and he's checking into rehab on Friday.
Wow.
And, like, that stuff never happened to me before. And then, you know, there's a guy in Houston that teaches school. He wanted to use my project to teach his kids and to let his kids, you know, talk amongst themselves about the project and then have a discussion in the class about the project. And he was just talking about how it bridges the gap. But, you know, for people that don't know anything about the church culture, and, you know, allows him to be able to speak to those things in a common man type of way, you know what I'm saying, to where they can understand it. So I started slowly seeing my role and where I fit and that I was just the conversation starter. You know what I'm saying? Like, and that people, like you said, some people are gonna frown at that and be like, yeah, something's wrong with you. But I feel comfortable in this position now. So when I try to go back to the old formula, I've even tried it on this project where I think about doing certain things. Mm-hmm. Doesn't feel right. Like it just, you know, it in my heart, I know that that's not you. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, that's not you anymore.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. That's really good. That's really good because there is so much pressure to be a certain way. We get it from so many angles, and people mean well.
Right.
You know, it's not all, like, I have this saying, we're all bad guys. You know, a lot of times when you have a conversation with somebody, you can look at someone like, I'm Batman, you're Joker.
Yeah.
I'm the good guy, you're the bad
guy. That's good.
You know, but a lot of times, we're all bad guys.
Yeah.
You know, yep. Like we all, even in us meaning well, you know, you can still do bad.
Yep.
You can still harm someone. And I don't think that there are malicious people who are going around trying to put their foot on people's neck. But I think that there is a real level of cultural, and I'm saying cultural on purpose, cultural bondage that people kind of feel like I'm bound to this particular way of doing things because this is where I come from.
Yeah.
You know, and this is how they do it. And the world becomes as big as the four walls,
mm-hmm.
whether it be your home, whether it be your school, your church, your neighborhood, your crew. And if God has designed you differently and you start wanting to step out, it's really hard to do that because you've got all this stuff inside you going, this is wrong. You mm-hmm. shouldn't do that.
Yeah.
And it's like when you really start to know yourself, work through it and go, well, why am I actually like what? Hey, I'm not wrong.
Right.
This is just different. And I think there's a lot of creative people that are just brilliant that are being stifled because they feel this responsibility to please other people.
Yeah.
You know, to make other folks whose lane is not their lane, you know, like do what they want them to do instead of like finding your lane. I think there's got to be some like real honesty to be able to go, you know what, like you're saying, like, you know what, man, I'm not good at that. And I'm not going to be good at that.
Yeah.
And I'm okay with the fact that I'm not good at that. This is what I do. And I do it really, really well. I'm going to try to be the best I possibly can be at that. And that's going to be okay.
Right.
And if you're not okay with that, you're going to have to walk around with that.
Yeah.
Because I can't be responsible for making you happy. You know? Because there are people out here who are going to miss out on what I'm supposed to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
And what God has got me doing. And what I was designed to do, because I'm over here trying to please you.
Yep.
And I'm over here trying to do the things that you're made to do. And I don't, and again, we're all bad guys. It's not like this is the bad guy.
Right.
It's just that this person really honestly believes, like, no. This is how we do it. And it takes some courage to break off and go, we can still be friends though we don't agree.
Right.
You know? And we can, like, mutually benefit and mutually support one another while not doing the same thing.
Yeah.
And that's got to be okay.
Because ultimately it's not about, and I think even when I was struggling with it, I was making it about me and not looking at the end result. And part of that comes from the fact, again, going back to just me and my notebook and writing and not seeing the audience that's going to receive it, which I think that a lot of times that, I don't know, I wouldn't say hinder things that I've, like success or whatever, but I see other artists that are able to make a song specifically for a group of people, and it's like strategically done that way.
Mm-hmm.
I just can't do that.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
that's just not your,
not my way of doing things. And so, you know, a lot of times I get caught up in that struggle of trying to do that, and then, you know, so it's not like I'm completely cured, you know what I'm saying,
mm-hmm.
of the identity crisis or trying to figure out, you know, who I am in that regard, but I've gotten a lot stronger, you know what I'm saying, over time, and I'm able to be comfortable in my own skin most of the time.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I think there's a lot of expectation for things to be easier in our creative endeavors too, you know, like And I think that's what the benefit of this is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like you do something and you kind of just expect it to work and it doesn't mm-hmm. work. And you're like, am I doing the wrong thing?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you get some pushback, you get some constructive criticism, you get somebody who's purely hating what you're doing.
Yeah.
And you're like, it shouldn't be like this.
Yeah, I'm falling off out here.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, but part of it is this difficulty, is this struggle, is this at home wrestling with, am I doing this right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, part of me wants to say to people listening, that's kind of part of it. It's just like, you're not going to always feel like you're doing the right thing.
Yeah.
You know? And if you do find yourself in a situation where you're struggling or afraid or scared or worried or nervous, it doesn't mean you're wrong. You know what I mean? Or it doesn't mean you're right either, but I'm just saying, like, don't, you know what I'm saying? Like, don't expect this all to be easy.
That's good for me because that's, like, and I think that God, like, God sees where we're at, right? And then we get comfortable in that position. He's like, well, I'm going to stretch you a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, even with what I'm telling you about the way that I got comfortable in my skin, like, being in here now trying to create the project, I'm like, man, it's supposed, like you said, it's supposed to be easy. Like, last time it was a lot easier to create this stuff. But now it's like God wants me to take it even further. Like, there's another level that I need to go because I can't just sit back and just be comfortable, you know what I'm saying, in this particular area. Like, he's wanting me to grow because I've learned a lot, you know, over the 2 years since my, last album. I've learned a lot and experienced a lot and digested some. I've become more aware about things from my past, so I can't be that same person. And I think part of my pressure that I was talking about earlier, the stress, is that people hear that old person, and anything that I do differently now is going to look completely weird to them or foreign to them, maybe. And that's what I'm nervous about. You know what I'm saying? With each project, you're kind of like that. But now more than ever, I don't know why, I feel like I'm more stressed out about that because I've become the person now. It's like with anything, when it's brand new, it's cool and it's, oh man, this is refreshing. But then over time, when you get, it's like they put you back in another box. Like, I got out of this box, now I'm free, I'm running around, I'm like, I'm, you know, doing this, doing that. Now you become that guy.
Yeah.
You know, and now I'm the Hell's Paradise guy now.
They expect
so,
that from me.
So if I do anything different, if I grow just a little bit outside of that, I'm like, man, you know, is it going to be, you know, what are they going to say? And it's, I mean, that's just a struggle that I'm having. I know that I probably shouldn't be thinking like that as far as what the ultimate goal is. But going through my creative process, that's how I've been thinking. And that's really what's been stressing me out, is that I'll go back and rewrite something because I'm struggling with trying to fit back in that Hell's Paradise mode, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, it's hard to feel like, I think one of the people I can think of immediately is like Reasonable Doubt, Jay-Z.
Yeah, yeah.
And what's the last album?
Holy Magna Grail. Carta,
Magna Carta, Holy Grail, Jay-Z. You know, like, they're not the same person.
Right.
Like, they're two, like, he's a different person than he was from Reasonable Doubt. You know? And he's talking about different things, the music sounds different, da 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 da. But he's still been able to remain relevant.
Right.
And people can still follow him.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Like, I think that's a skill in itself, and being able to grow and not lose yourself,
mm-hmm.
not feel like you are like a slave to your consumers.
Exactly.
But at the same time, be able to bring them along with you.
Yeah.
Because there's a weird tension and balance to play with there. Because there, like I said, I tend to go forward instead of shrink back.
Yeah.
So when I feel that pressure of like, da 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 da, give us what we want, I'm like, I'm gonna do what I want to do.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Y'all ain't gonna tell me what to do.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Which
yeah.
Is probably
no,
not
you.
The right response.
Yeah, I feel you.
But that's my
you.
Response.
That's what I don't. Yeah.
You ain't gonna tell
what
me what
do.
To do.
Yeah.
I'm gonna do what I want.
Exactly.
But, like, how do I not cuss everybody out?
Right.
You know.
Right.
Continue to grow and develop, but do it in a way where I'm not selfishly doing it.
Yeah.
Because there is a level to where I am providing a service here.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
Like how do I, you know, like you said, common ground.
Yeah.
To still keep the common ground so that you can follow me, but at the same time, for the people who don't follow me, I don't know. It's
I feel you. That's what, and like to go back to like Jay-Z, like I feel like he's a master at that, at finding the trend that was popular at the time and taking a little bit of it. And
but not then, losing himself.
But not losing himself. And so for me, like not in a aggressive way, but still, I still do the same thing that you do, where I'm mm-hmm. like, don't tell me what to do.
Mm-hmm.
Where I feel like a lot of times I don't even go as far as to take a little bit of what's going on, or like I try to stay away from it on mm-hmm. purpose, because I'm like, you know, I need to just stay over here and just do this. So my struggle is, it's just a struggle to master that balance, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
And then as I get older, you know, I have a pressure. I feel like I'm running out of time to.
Oh, really?
To do that. Hmm. Like, it's almost like you, it's like the Mario Brothers game. Like, you hear the music playing and it's like,
yeah.
You got to speed up and run faster.
That is a great analogy, by the way.
Yeah, but that's how it feels. And it's not like, it's just in a music sense, though, just in the music part of it. I've been doing it for a long time, and it's like you go to these different levels and all this, and it's like, man, you know, I don't know what am I trying to even attain here? Like, you know what I mean? And it's like, am I getting it right? And sometimes I'm confident. I'm like, yeah, I am getting it. I'm in my own skin. I feel comfortable in my own skin. I am getting it right. But then you see everybody else doing this or doing that, and it's like, I'm not doing it right. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know,
it's hard.
I haven't mastered it. You know what I mean? So you go
and there's
back.
That entitlement again. And I'm not picking on you.
No, for
I'm
you.
Saying
this is
I'm
good.
Saying in real life there is this entitlement that I struggle with, and I see a lot of people struggle with. They feel entitled to other people's success.
Yeah.
They feel entitled to other people's riches and mm-hmm. whatever the case may be. And mm-hmm. And if you don't have it, one of the things that you start doing is going, what did I do wrong?
Right.
You know, instead of going, okay, this is where I'm at.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Like, one of the sayings that I've heard that sticks with me is, the journey is the destination. Like, that is a powerful saying to me, because I am a destination person.
Yeah.
I am a, give me a trophy.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Give me accolades, pat me on the back, words of affirmation. Good job, Octavius. Mm-hmm. I did it. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
But instead of like, as of lately, it's been reflecting and going, man, I'm growing. Man, I'm getting better.
Yeah.
Man, I'm better than I was yesterday. I'm stronger today than I was yesterday. You know, and that's the trophy. The trophy is who I'm becoming.
Yeah.
Not necessarily standing on top of this mountain.
Right.
And that's kind of, it's not, like I said, I haven't figured it out, but it's freed me up to be able to kind of go more creatively where the opportunities present themselves, instead of going, I want that.
Right.
And if I don't get that, I failed.
Yeah.
And for Bear Fruit, honestly, there was a lot of, I want that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Bear Fruit's going to be the next Nike. No.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's like, Bear Fruit's going to so-and-so and so. No. And everything was about what I could set my eye on and how fast I could get there. And if I didn't get there, it's like, oh.
You failed.
You know?
Yeah.
I failed. And it's taken a lot of, you know, wrestling with God, but it's now I'm starting to get, you know, this is more about how you are maturing and growing and developing, and the what you're getting out of it is who you're becoming,
right?
You know, and that's freed me up to even do podcasting now. And there's just joy that's coming from things that totally I did not even expect.
Yeah,
you know, like I wanted joy or success to me was everybody walking around with my logo on their shirt. Like, everyone walks around with Nike on their shirt.
Yeah.
You know? Like, that was my trophy. Now it's like getting an email going, yo, that podcast, man, where so-and-so said so-and-so. Man, that really moves me. And I'm like, I don't, like, I'd be ready to like cry and stuff like that. And it's like,
yeah, that's dope.
And I don't even know if this person purchased anything,
right?
You know, and right. It's like, it's freeing me up to be able to go, okay, where am I going now?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Where is this journey taking me, and who, and what's gonna happen along the way?
Mm-hmm.
But again, that's good. You know, that's good storytelling.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, if the story was the beginning and then at the end he makes it and it's over, it's like, well, you ain't telling me no.
Yeah, it's not a good story at all, man. So yeah, that's going back to my past, like with basketball and other sports too. Like you get trained to always see the goal, conquer, and get the trophy.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And I can see that still in myself. You know what I mean? Like, to you're trained to conquer. You see the goal, and then a lot of times, you know, if you don't have people, a lot of people don't have the instinct to just, you know, they write out their own goals, or they're not as self-aware to write out their own goals. So they look at what somebody else has done, and they say, okay, that's what I should aim at.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? But that's that person's story.
Yeah.
And I can look back at my own, like, where I did a lot of that, like trying to create different businesses, like, you know, with music labels or whatever, based on somebody else's success or formula, or going out and getting four dudes and like, you know, you're gonna be my artist, or you know what I'm saying, like before you even get anything off the ground. But it's based on what you see other people's fruit, and you try to create that, you know what I'm saying, without even putting in the work or going on the journey. So but as I get older, man, like it's like you said, I think for me, you talking about with the emails about the podcast, you get that I get that mostly at shows, and they're like, I don't tour a whole lot, so I don't really get those conversations as much as I would if I toured a whole lot.
Yeah.
So it's like, you have to, like, for me, the way I've been trained, like, I have to put a goal. I have to see the goal and go get the goal. So it has to be something.
Yeah, I think that's important.
You know what I'm saying? Like, it's important, but it becomes a struggle at times, like, because it can consume you, especially when you've played, like, growing up playing sports. And
yeah,
it becomes a job to just attain the goal.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. I can definitely relate with that, but as I get older, the goal is becoming more of the normal stuff, I guess, outside of just what everybody else would view success.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
And also, it's, you know, a lot of it coming down to success. Like, good things come to those that hustle.
Yeah,
you know, being a master of the mundane, the little things.
Yeah,
you know, being faithful over little stuff. It just, you know, it just seems to be like, oh, look at this, you know.
Yeah.
I have been faithful over these things. That's what I was going to be faithful for. I think the thing is, I've concluded that it's never going, I've come to the conclusion that it never is what you have in your mind.
Right.
It's always some sort of mutation of that.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, and I'm kind of now walking into things going, all right, I really don't know what's at the end of this,
right?
I'm gonna move aggressively in that direction and keep my eyes open.
Yeah,
you know, I know what would be cool, but I'm just holding on to things with a looser hand because I've seen over and over and over again, it's not really about this thing that I've created in my mind. It's about, you know, moving forward, having a good time, and looking forward to growing, and kind of seeing what's gonna happen.
Yeah,
because most of the time it's better than what I, you know, like it's better than what I thought of.
Right. Yeah,
you know,
it's just scary to go that route.
Yeah, totally scary.
Yeah.
I'd rather just have my way.
Right, exactly.
You know,
exactly. But that's, I mean, I'm excited about like the next chapter of my life being able to do that. Like I joked with Whit earlier, I was just like, man, like when we were on the couch watching TV, and I was just like, man, wouldn't it be dope if I didn't have an album to like record right now? And we were just sitting on it. The couch, just chilling, just talking and having a good time. Like those, like going back to your email on the podcast, like I get fulfillment out of that stuff now. I've created a lot of real friends in music, but then I also have some people that are just there because it's music.
You got rap cats that you gotta act like you like.
Yeah, straight up. Like it's and a lot of times I don't even act like I, you know, like, I'm not rude, but I have genuine dudes that, like, I want to just build with, man, like, and just do life with. But, you know, this world that we're in is, I wouldn't say it's in the way, but it's becoming, it can be a hindrance at times because of that goal that I'm talking about, like what I was trying to say about the trophy.
Yeah.
Like, because it's not just you that is concerned about the trophy. You know what I'm saying? There's other people involved and other people that are cheering for you to reach the trophy. But just as I'm getting older, like, just like it was when I transitioned from my first album to Hell's Paradise, like, I'm seeing that something's not right about this. You know what I'm saying? Like, the trophy that everybody is telling me is the trophy, I don't feel like it's the trophy anymore.
What is the trophy for you? That's a great transition. What is the trophy for
The trophy
you?
For me,
in
man.
In your mind.
And people think I'm crazy. Like, I had conversations with music people that represent us about this recently, like, because we're talking two different languages. Like, trophy for me right now is, I'm married, I have two kids. They do a lot of stuff that I don't want to miss. And I enjoy having conversations with my kids about real life stuff, and I feel like I lose out on some of that. I have conversations. I love having conversations with my wife. Even now, we've been married going on, 12 years. And as you should, I'm still learning stuff about her, but I can't if I'm not having those conversations. And I just feel like at times I'm so consumed with this world that it takes away from those conversations.
When you say this world, what world are you talking about?
I'm about to get real honest up in here.
Please, that's what we want.
But just the not even a CHH world, but just the music world, just this, I don't know exactly what to call it, but it's this world that's been created that I don't feel like I fit in anymore. You know what I'm saying? Like, the when I enter into this world and I'm so trained to go after trophies, you get sucked into all that. But I know that, in me, I'm like, that's, let me leave. Let me get out of here and focus on what's important. And that's not to say that I want to stop just completely just rapping and all that kind of stuff. But I just, in my heart, I'm like, man,
there's more than this.
There's more than this. Like, I would much rather, as much as I love making music with Wit, I would much rather it be, like, when we were making Hell's Paradise, for instance, we did it on our own time. We did it because, not because people were like, give us that Hell's Paradise. We did it because we were like, this is an amazing idea. God has really put this on my heart. Wit felt the same way. We were reading the same book at the same time. Things were just clicking. It was organic. We were building a friendship, and great music was made. Stories were told.
Kind of came out of conviction.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to get to a place now to where it's like, we have to do this.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, we have to put this together or else. No, because I'm being used, like you said with the podcast, you had Bear Fruit, you thought it was going to go this way, you want to be this, and then God led you to this podcast, completely different form, platform, but he's still using that other platform.
Right, yeah.
And I know in my mind there's tons of other things and other ways for me to communicate God's truth and, tell stories through my experience that are a lot different than just doing rap and rhyming over a beat. What I'm saying? Which I love to do, and I'm not saying that that's going to disappear, but I don't know. I joke with my friend a lot of times, my best friend. I'm like, man, sometimes I just want to be just a regular dude, man. Like, and that's not to say that I'm not famous or have these riches or anything, but it's just like, when you, like, we were watching Chris Rock earlier with Seinfeld, and they were having a conversation. He said to get up in front of people and talk to 1,000 people in the room is way more, it's way harder than slam dunking or scoring a touchdown or just all these other things that people think are great, which they are great, but mm-hmm. he's saying to be able to hold the attention of 1,000 people in the room with one microphone is crazy. He said if I came to my school and my 5-year-old had 50 other 5-year-olds and they were just paying attention to him and he was just talking to him, he'd be like, something's weird about that dude. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But he said that, but now everybody wants him. Whenever there's a microphone in the room, they want him to talk.
Mm.
Whether it be a funeral, whether it be that's whatever. Pressure. And so you become, again, this guy. You know what I'm saying? Like, people hit you up like, you know, give me that Hell's Paradise. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, tell this story right here. I'm like, I don't have that story. That's not my story. and so you just feel pressure to do that type of stuff,
mm-hmm.
you know what I'm saying? Which I don't comply with a lot of that stuff, but it's still, you know, you feel just this push to where it's going a certain way,
mm-hmm.
if that makes any sense. So, but yeah, so my goals now are, you know, I want to teach my family, which I have been, but just getting deeper with my family about God and loving them and building relationships like with and other people that are like genuine and aren't founded, you know, the foundation isn't something that's just finicky, like, because
mm-hmm.
this whole thing is just
mm-hmm.
it's not real, you know what I mean? We joked, or we didn't joke, we were having a serious conversation, I shouldn't say that, but it was, we were laughing in the middle of it, but we were like, we did Hell's Paradise, which is the concept is everything is upside down and, you know, people think that they're in paradise, but it's really, you know, like a picture of hell, or, you know, pointing to what hell really is. Like, we're living in it, but a lot of people think it's paradise.
Mm-hmm.
And we're like, a lot of the artists that were influenced by that started, you know, doing music that way. And now when you look up at where we are as a sub-genre of culture and
mm-hmm.
Christian hip-hop, like, that's become the norm. So when we do something like that, it's just mixed in and lumped in with everything else. But a lot of those dudes is not even authentic.
Hmm.
Like, some of those guys have great lives. They don't have bad stories.
Oh.
But they create bad stories. Like... I'll go to, like, a Rapzilla or something and just listen to the music, and I'm like, why is everybody sad? Why are you sad? Like, really? I'm not saying that's not to take away from anybody's story.
Sure, yeah.
But come on. Like, not mm-hmm. everybody is sad. Like, so we were coming with this concept, which I don't think that'll be the name of the album now, but it was like, everything went wrong. Like, everything went wrong.
I like it.
This is not what we meant. When we did that.
Right.
Everything is going wrong. Like, this is not what we were talking about. This is not why we created it. This is not why I started the conversation. Not so everybody could bottle it up and then put their sticker on it and sell it. No. Like, have a real experience. And I feel like this is just becoming a way for people to have just fake experiences. You know what I'm saying? Like, which is our that's the culture we live in now anyway. Online, with social media, you
that
can be...
That was the whole argument about, you know, Drake and Meek Mill.
Yeah,
the
exactly.
The whole conversation of, like, you know, this dude don't write his own stuff.
And, right.
You know, it does seem, though, like... Well, you can even tell me what your thoughts on this. We can transition a little bit into, like, how you feel about hip-hop in general as a fan, as a consumer. You know what I mean?
Right.
Because, like, that whole Drake Meek Mill thing is, like... You know, Drake's from Canada. He's from the six, whatever that means. I don't know. I'm not gonna sit in front
Zone
of that.
Six in Atlanta.
Hey, okay, sure. I don't know. I really don't know. I know he made it popular though, but you know, and Meek saying, "Hey, yo, this dude don't write his own rhymes," and da 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 da, yada yada yada,
yeah.
And there was kind of a resounding, and
right.
So?
Right. Oh, exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. Because
Bull Hot, though. He nice. You know, so it's like...
Because of where we are right now. Because you cannot tell me in the 90s if anybody besides
Dr. Dre
or Dr. Dre were to be found out
mm-hmm.
and that they had a ghostwriter and they were writing lyrics, you can't tell me that it wouldn't have been a huge story.
Yeah.
Or not even a huge story, because it wasn't, you know, there wasn't social media and all that, but the respect level
mm-hmm.
would be different. And not just from other artists, but from the consumer. Like,
yeah.
I feel like the fan cared more about stuff like that, whereas now it's like
entertainment.
Yeah, he's just, you know, and I used to wonder why a lot of dudes, like, at these, you know, Christian hip hop events, that Christian hip hop is their first introduction into, like, hip hop culture a lot of times.
Oh, man, I was gonna say something mean. I'm gonna say it. It's my podcast. What I wanna say. Yo, I'm sorry for you. I feel bad, yo. If that's your first engagement with hip hop.
But a lot of them, that's what it is, man. That's what it is. But I would get questions like, you write your own stuff? You write all of it?
Question mark?
Yeah, like, they would ask me that. Like, I've gotten that a lot. And I've gotten it from older, like, Caucasian people would ask me that.
Okay, wait, hold on. This is particularly from the Christian community.
Whenever I've had the question, it's been somebody that was a Christian hip-hop fan.
Okay.
They would be shocked. It was either someone that was a Christian hip-hop fan or an outsider that just heard me. You know, I don't know how they heard me, but they'd be like, oh man, this is, you know, such and such is playing your stuff, man. It's really, I don't really like rap, but that's really good. Do you write your own stuff? And you know, or the Christian hip hop fan would say the same thing, like, do you write your own stuff? And I'm like, that question always throws me off. Like, I'm supposed to write my own stuff,
yeah.
Right? Because from where I'm, you know, as far as like the era that when I was listening to music, like, that's what it was. If you were, you know, an MC, or mm-hmm. you were claiming to be an MC, and those that weren't, you knew who they were.
Yeah.
Like, you knew that Dre wasn't writing this stuff.
Right.
You knew that Easy wasn't writing this stuff. You
mm-hmm.
knew that Diddy wasn't writing this stuff. You knew who was writing this stuff. But when you got on the mic and said that I'm writing my stuff and I'm the greatest at writing my stuff,
yeah.
then you meant it, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Or you hit it very, very well.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So I think that, but the consumer now just doesn't care. They just want the product.
Yeah, just, I agree. I think that, you know, because there was a part of me that was like, can't front, Drake's nice. I mean,
he is, though.
You know, so I guess the fan in me and the consumer in me, the person who enjoying things,
yeah,
was like, if it's Quentin, don't stop.
Right.
But, if it's Quentin,
but Drake
keep doing that.
Drake is on a different level, though. I don't view him in the same category. He's in a category of a Kanye. Like, who cares who writes Kanye stuff?
Yeah.
Kanye is a character now. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's not... He's on that level. Like, I heard an interview with Nelly the mm-hmm. other day, and Nelly was talking about it, and he just said, they asked him if anybody ever wrote his stuff, and he was like, of course. He said,
oh, really?
Yeah, he said, when you're in the studio with cats like Pharrell or Jermaine Dupri, like, these are producers that bring whole ideas to the table, and they're geniuses. And then he also said, like, when you're on Drake is on a pop star level. His job, he's hired by Universal Records to make hit records. He's not hired by, and then he has a publisher, he's not hired by these people to just make street records that don't do anything on the charts or move the needle. People put money behind him. So, just like with a company, if you get investors, you go hire employees. So, one of his people on his payroll is, you write me hits. You bring me hits. And you know, Diddy did the same thing. Dre did the same thing. It might not have been all artists that wrote for him, but, I mean, Dre had a ton of producers around all the time. Diddy had the Hitman. He had other artists that were writing for him. Like, they're on payroll to do that because it's a different level. Like, it's a money-making machine that it's not just them with their little independent system.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, Diddy signed a deal with, you know, Interscope and Jimmy Iovine. It's like, you got to bring me the hits. You're Motown.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
at all costs.
Temptations wasn't writing their stuff.
Yeah.
Smokey Rock, you know what I'm saying? Like, they had sessions where it was just, we going to write a hit for these people. And that's what I think it is. So I don't put him in that category. Even when he says he's the greatest, I don't really...
That's part of the character
he's playing. That's part of the character he's playing. You know what I'm saying?
Wow. Can't say that I... Like, the way you put it, like, I think I've thought of all those things, but yeah. I didn't put the conspiracy theory together like that. You know what I'm saying? I hadn't put all the parts together and all the different characters.
Yeah.
I was like, man, that's like the plot of a movie you just told
dog.
Me just now.
But think about it, though, dog. Like, if J. Cole.
Mm-hmm.
If you found out J. Cole was not writing his stuff, it would hurt.
Yeah.
But we find out that Drake's not writing this stuff, it doesn't, because he's Jay, J. Cole is Nas. If you find out Nas wasn't writing this stuff,
yeah,
it would sting a little bit.
Yeah.
I don't know if...
It would hurt me if I found out Jay-Z wasn't writing
it. It would, but you would understand. Like, you would... If this was 96, 97, 98, it might hurt a little bit more. But right now, I think people would understand. Right now, like, don't if he drops something
out, don't
new,
don't let me find out Kendrick. Yeah, yeah. Right.
Who that?
Kendrick. Don't let me find out Kendrick.
See, that's another. You can't. No, you can't.
I will fall out on the floor.
You can't. But when you become a business,
when you yourself
become a business,
are a business,
it's different.
You need to write movie scripts, Dre. You need to write a movie script, because you just laid out a whole. You know.
We don't think about that, though. You don't think about the company that's behind. Like, Nelly was on Universal. It's not just Universal. It's this big... He was signed to a publisher, too. And they not just there to sign you just so you sit around. They're right. Like, bring me songs that we can make money on. And it's not going to be these... Like Nelly was saying, it was like, you know, there's a street hit, which Meek has a lot of. And then there's a worldwide hit.
Hmm.
The gap in between those two is huge.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you don't have to do music anymore if you make a worldwide hit like that. And you can tour forever. If you make a street hit, you can go to a club with 50 people and do your thing for a little while. You know what I'm saying? But, and then with the worldwide hit, you get endorsements, you get et cetera, et cetera. So it's like, it's all, it comes down to the dollar bill for them, man. Like, it's like, who cares culturally what's happening? There's checks in my mailbox.
Yeah.
Every quarter.
Do you feel like that's waved, flowed over into different subcultures of music?
Christian
as well?
Hip-hop? Is that what you're meaning?
Well, I was saying different. I was gonna say Christian hip-hop. I was just, you know, making my way there. But yes, yeah, Christian hip-hop.
Absolutely. I don't think that it's, of course, it's not on the level as some of these cats, but I think there's a level of going back to what I said earlier about when I was making the transition, I was doing this formula, and I knew that these people would eat up this formula. So you always have a stream of income. You know what I'm saying? It's tons of people I know right now that are doing this thing full time that lyrically aren't great, but they mimic something that's familiar to a youth pastor or whatever. You know what I'm saying? And so they constantly are getting booked, and they do it full time, and they make good money doing it. So in the same way, it's not on the same level, obviously, but they do have a business that's producing a stream of income, and it's just a formula. You know what I'm saying? And some people are okay with that, with right. that formula, even though they could do it another way, and they probably maybe from the same school of thought that I am, but they're wired in a way to where it's about the business
right.
at the end of the day.
And that's okay for them.
And that's okay with them. And, you know, they could be a mechanic, a janitor, a basketball coach. It's all going to come down to the business. You know what I mean? They're not truly in that position. They're businessmen. And they're selling themselves and a product. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's some people can do that. And again, it's not about, well, this is wrong and this
nah,
is
it's not right.
right
or wrong. It's just what it is.
It's just what it is. And I figured that out about myself. Like, I'm not wired like that. I've tried plenty of times, like I said, in the past to look at like a independent label model and like, okay, I'm going to build that. But I'm not wired like that, because to do that, you have to have somebody that is just wired to think business. Like, what's going to affect our bottom line? Like, how are we going to push the business forward, not how are we gonna make the best music? You know what I'm saying? So I don't know, man. It definitely has bled over into Christian hip hop and then other genres too. I mean, hip hop got that from, you know, the other worlds of music, mm-hmm. and the worlds of music that didn't formulate to that, they like started dying out. You know what I'm saying? Or they got ate up by hip hop because hip hop became so popular. So rock, for instance, it died. You know, you don't see any big name rock and roll stars with endorsements like that no more. You see all hip hop guys. Like, I got a Sprite the other day and it had Nas lyrics on it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It had Drake lyrics on it. Like, mm-hmm. that's big business, dog. When Sprite, like, we don't think about that, but that's like a corporation is hiring you and taking your lyrics and putting it on their product. Like, that's not, you got to move culture to be able to do that. You know what I'm saying? So
speaking of moving culture, kind of moving into like the last question I always ask everybody.
Yeah.
I like to get an idea of like when, you know, you look back over your career as a creative, as a husband, as a friend, as whatever the case may be, you know, how do you want people to be inspired? What kind of inspirational effects do you want to leave on people? You know, because Bear Fruit's whole thing is believe, create, inspire, and the goal is inspiration. That's the final result.
Yeah.
You know, take what you believe, create something, inspire your circle of influence. So
yeah.
What kind of inspirational effect do you want to leave on your circle of influence when, you know, people look back on?
Yeah. My big thing is to be yourself. I want to inspire people and push people to a higher level of themselves. Can't be 100% there because we're in a human experience. We're always going to have a struggle to want to gravitate towards whatever is working. That's just mm-hmm. how we've been wired. But the closer we get to that, like the people that are most successful, they've gotten the closest to being themselves. You know what mm-hmm. I'm saying? Who God ultimately created them to be. The people that aren't as successful, and I'm not just talking about like monetarily or people see you on TV or whatever, but just in life, is because I feel like they are either trying a formula or trying somebody else's, you know, way of doing things, and it's just not working. So when people look over my life, I want them to, in some way, I want them to say, man, he was authentic. Mm. Like, he was, what he talked about, what I heard about him, like, I believe it to be true, and that doesn't push me to want to be like him in a way he was doing things, but it pushes me to want to be authentic in who God created me to be and to be the best person that I can be.
Right.
That's what I think about when I look at all the leaders that I'm inspired by, is that a lot of them are all different, but, you know, they got stones thrown at them. They, you know, people were upset at them about a lot of things. People didn't understand them half of the time, but they were authentic. You know what I'm saying? And they push culture forward by being authentic. So, yeah.
That's good, man.
Yeah, man.
Well, I appreciate your time, man. I appreciate it.
Yeah, dude. I appreciate you, man. This is dope. I'm excited to, or anxious to, look back on it and listen to it to see how much I was rambling and stuff.
Yeah, no, it's good. I mean, from sitting and listening to it, as you know, having a conversation with you, that's the whole point. The whole point of this podcast is to kind of have a real conversation,
right?
Not an interview and not, oh, what is this? You know what I mean?
Right.
But a real talk.
Yeah.
To have some honesty, because this is the side I believe people don't get a chance to see.
Yeah, no doubt. No.
They just see the finished product, but they don't see the person behind the mask, so to speak.
Yep.
So, where can the people find you on the internet?
That kind of stuff. The internet. Combat Jack.
Yeah.
Dre Murray 22 on Twitter, Instagram. I think it's like that on Facebook too. I'm not really on Facebook. Like, mm-hmm. It's not my thing. But Twitter mainly, and Instagram, Dre Murray 22. We-kings.com or collisionrecords.com. Mixcloud.com is like the label stuff, and they can get a lot of my music from there as well. So, yeah, or iTunes.
Yep, on iTunes.
Yep.
Apple
yep.
Music.
Yep,
Apple all Music. All that good stuff. You're on Apple Connect.
Yeah, yeah.
All that stuff as well.
Yeah, I don't know how I got there. I think somebody, one of the higher ups did that.
There it is. The machine.
Yeah, exactly. I told you. They out there.
Yeah. If you want to follow me on Twitter and Instagram, it's Octavius A. Newman, OctaviusAnewman. It's the same thing on Twitter and Instagram. Bear Fruit on Twitter and Instagram, B3ARFRUIT. Hit us up, bearfruit.com. If you like this podcast, give us 5 stars, positive rating, leave comments, let us know how you think, what you think, how you feel. Subscribe, rate, review, and I really hope you guys are enjoying this because I'm enjoying doing it. And until next time, peace.